afternoon, folks. This is Jim Madonna from the University of Alaska Mining Extension. We're back here with Alaska Gold Trails once again after a summer vacation. As you know, this is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. More specifically, folks, gold mining in Alaska's misty past, controversial present, and mysterious future. I'll be with you here on KFAR 660 on your radio dial each Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m., where we can discuss the entire spectrum of mining in Alaska, from the fascinating and colorful history of mining and the major and minor gold rushes to the most recent gold prospecting and mining techniques. Also, we will have special guests to discuss different mining-related topics. Most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have a question or care to make a comment on mining in Alaska. Or maybe you just want to chat for a few minutes. Or perhaps you'd like to share one of your favorite frontier experiences. The number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. Without any delay today, folks, I'd like to introduce our guest, Dr. William Ransom Wood. Everybody in Fairbanks is probably familiar with Dr. Wood and many of the things that he's done for our community here. And I want to welcome you, Dr. Wood, to Alaska Gold Trails. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Jim. It's a pleasure and really an honor to be on your program. I think the mining his history of interior Alaska is something very, very special, and it isn't ended yet.
No, it certainly hasn't, Dr. Wood. Why don't you give us a brief history about where you were born and raised and what kind of environment you were raised in?
Well, Jim, I'm a farm boy from the prairie state of Illinois, but we did have on our farm in Morgan County an outcropping of coal. One of the creeks that ran through the pasture lands, and we'd go down, and it was about a 4-foot vein, but we could get coal for the winter, and the neighbors would come in and load up wagons with it. It wasn't really mining; it was kind of scavenging, I suppose, of what was available.
Yeah, a lot of times. The locals used the coal in the state of Alaska. The coal would wash up on the beaches, and people would go down the beaches and pick it up and scavenge it in that sense as well.
This was a bituminous coal, and there's a lot of it back in Illinois. There's a whole sheet of coal. This happened to be a thin vein of about 4 feet.
Mm-hmm. Were you raised in Illinois and then
Oh, yes. I was raised there and attended Murrayville Community High School, a little town of about 525 residents, and I don't think it's grown very much over the years, but it's a very fine farm country for corn and later soybeans. We grew oats and wheat and clover and raised some stock, and of course then there was all the orchards and the berries and the vegetables and potatoes and whatnot that we had. So it was a real farm experience.
Mm-hmm. You also attended the college there at Illinois, didn't you?
Yes, at Jacksonville is Illinois College, which is the oldest private liberal arts college in the Midwest. It was founded in 1829 by a group of seven from Yale. They were Presbyterian, Congregational, ministerial group, I guess, and they came into the Midwest to help set up small colleges, and this happened to be their first venture, and it's still running at about 1,000 students now, and it's been for nearly 160 years, it's been always in the black financially, except for, I guess, one of the wars, the Civil War or something. They ran a deficit for a year or so.
After finishing your education at that college, did you go on to a university?
Well, yes, I went for graduate studies for 1 year at the University of Illinois at Urbana, studying English literature. But then, after 1 year, I became a teacher up in the copper country of northern Michigan, the Keweenaw Peninsula, and that at Lake Linden. And I was a teacher and a coach. And that was a very interesting experience. And then the next year after that, and this remembered time of the Depression, I went to Wakefield on the Gogebic Iron Range and spent about 5 or 6 years, 6 years, I guess, there. Then when it looked as if I never would make any headway on the problem of you'd have to borrow money in the summer to run you over to the next fall, and then by the time you'd paid that off during the next school year, you had to go borrow some more money to live through the summer. I tried to break that by going to University of Iowa for a master's degree and stayed on to take a doctorate degree in 1939 from the University of Iowa. In Keats's poetry, by the way, pretty far removed from mining.
I'd like to remind the listening audience that the guest here today on Alaska Gold Trails is Dr. William Ransom Wood. And if you'd like to ask Dr. Wood a question or make a comment, give us a call at 479-8255. That's 479-TALK. Following your education experience, Dr. Wood, what was your first activity? I understand, by the way, that you played a little basketball.
Well, I did. While I was coaching in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, I played what was in those days called professional basketball. It really wasn't, but we played all of the teams in the country that of that time, the Cleveland Rosenblums and the New York Celtics. It was New York then, not Boston, and the Green Bay Packers had a team, and then there was one that traveled called the Olsen Swedes, and we played the Harlem Globetrotters 9 games, as I remember, and managed to win 4 of them over a period of half a dozen years. The team is made up of coaches. One time we were known as the Michigan Mentors. Another time we were the Kelly Springfields out of Detroit. But it really wasn't professional ball, but it was called that in those days. That was the late 20s, early 30s. It was a different ball game than what you have today. Very different.
Look, Dr. Wood, I'd like to get back with you and talk more about your experiences in education right after a few messages here.
It's the perfect getaway. The Getaway From It All special offer from Chena Hot Springs Resort. Just $99.95 buys deluxe overnight hotel lodgings for both of you. Dinner for two, choose any item from the beef and seafood menu, and unlimited use of the swimming pool, hot tubs, and jacuzzi. But the $99.95 dinner and lodging offer is limited, so call 452-7867 now for reservations. For the getaway that's only an hour away, Chena Hot Springs Resort.
Take a moment to think about Alaska, the way it was just a few short years ago. Imagine, if you can, our state without the pipeline, no permanent fund dividend checks. Picture foreign fleets depleting our fisheries because there's no 200-mile fishing limit. Fewer jobs, less business opportunities, a substantially reduced military investment. It may not be pleasant to recall, but that's the way it was before we sent Don Young to Congress. As our only congressman, Don Young has been a leader for change, positive change. But sometimes we all get a little impatient for what remains to be done, like opening ANWR and exporting oil, and new revenues for things like daycare and an improved transportation system. But with Don at the helm, you know they're coming, because Don Young in Congress is the best guarantee we have that tomorrow's Alaska will be even better than today's.
Paid for by the National Republican Congressional Committee and authorized by Alaskans for Don Young.
Hi, this is Dr. Harvey Rubin. I'm the TalkNet psychiatrist. I've been here every Saturday and Sunday night for the last 5 years. You know, we can talk about anything you'd like to do that has to do with mental health or mental illness or your emotional life. We can talk about problems in the family or on your job or with your friends. We're here to help by giving you the kind of information you need so that you can make the choices that you have to give yourself that kind of life that you'd like. So join me right here on TalkNet.
I want to remind the listening audience once again that we're here on Alaska Gold Trails with Dr. Wood. If you have a question of Dr. Wood or care to make a comment on Alaska Gold Trails, please give us a call. The number is 479-8255. That's 479-TALK. Dr. Wood, you were saying that you played basketball. Was that the professional basketball? Were you playing basketball at the same time you were coaching?
Yes. Coaching and teaching, both at Lake Linden Hubble High School, that's up in the Copper Country, and then over in the Gogebic Iron Range at Wakefield. I'd like to comment on that, to reflect a minute on that experience, because it was a memorable one. I had some good fortune of having some very good players. In the mining towns, you had first-generation born Americans from almost all of the central and northern and southern European countries. We had many Poles and Finns and Irish and Norwegians and Germans and Italians and the like. And they were wonderful young people, and they took to sports avidly and did a great job. But thing that I remember. I had one young man by the name of Cavender that was at Wakefield, and he was a fine player and a brilliant student. Later he became a medical doctor and is still practicing and still very well known in the Midwest. His grandfather's name was Bonino, and he had spent 10 years in the gold mining in Juneau, Alaska, and was always telling us about the good days of the AJ mine there in Juneau. And I hadn't thought of that in a long while. I was back just a couple of years ago to the Upper Peninsula. The occasion was the celebration of the centennial of the discovery of iron on the Gogebic Range. And I had been there just 50 years before teaching, and I was asked to come back and speak there at Wakefield. It was something that bothers me even yet. I had been there in the time of a depression, but when everything was working, at least at the beginning. The mines were operating, the big stamp mills were operating, the smelter was operating, the ships were coming in from the Great Lakes to take out the ore, and the Northwestern Railroad was taking out the shipment, the ingots of copper on the rail, the timber was being harvested, and there were great sawmills and planing mills and plyboard mills and whatnot, and everybody was employed in it with a sort of a happy and a thriving time. 50 years later, in the same place, everything was closed down, with the exception of government employment and tourism. They had built some ski resorts, which we didn't have in the old days, and that provided some employment, and they operated in the summer also as recreational camps. But there was absolutely no employment except for government and recreation. The result, all of the young people of the community were gone. By young people, I mean those in their 20s and 30s and early 40s. They were gone. They'd gone to places like Detroit and Milwaukee and Chicago and St. Paul, Minneapolis, Duluth. And there was an emptiness in the town as a result. There were many old people there, and it was still a very pleasant place to live. It was much like interior Alaska. In fact, the winters are considerably more severe in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan than they are here, because it's a snow belt and you will get up to 20, 30 feet of snow in the winter time, and you drive on the highways always on 6 or 8 feet of snow that's packed down in the winter time. I recall my first winter there, and all these snow fences, and I wondered what in the world they were. I'd never seen a snow fence. But I also noted that the houses all had doors on the street side at the second story of the, at the second story level. Now, what in the world would you have a door up there? Windows, all you need. He said, well, wait till winter comes. And in winter, that was the exterior entrance, was at the second level. You walked out on the snow. But the you get storms there from Lake Superior and the heavy winds, and of course you do not get winds of that sort in the interior of Alaska. But in the cold, I remember dropping as low as 50 degrees below zero, but with a howling wind, the cold penetrability was extreme.
Yeah. You know, regarding the deterioration of the economy within the area that you were speaking about, I'd like to share an experience with you. This past year, I went to a town in Nevada, which at one time was a thriving gold mining community, and then after the gold mining waned in the earlier or mid part of the century, it kind of lost its flavor for a while. And then with the renewed interest in gold leaching, several large mines opened up in the area, and the town was thriving. And when I visited it for about, this was about the third time, the people were happy and they were all smiling, and the economy was up and the community was thriving. And along those same lines, I'd like to point out a characteristic of the Fairbanks area. Back in the 1970s, when Gerald Ford, of course, pulled the requirement of ownership, or released ownership to the public of gold, which took place in 1974, our gold mining industry started to blossom once again. And in that period of time, of course, a lot of people came into the Alaska area, and they began gold mining in the various creeks around. And some of the people took a glimpse into the future and saw an opening to start manufacturing certain items. And one of these people was Hector's, out at Hector's Welding, which is located at 13 Mile Richardson Highway. He began building sluice boxes. Well, it was recognized that the sluice, old-style single-channel sluice boxes weren't very effective at collecting much of the fine gold. And so Hector, along with a lot of advice from many of the miners in the interior of Alaska, began building multiple-channel sluice boxes, which captured a larger concentration of the fine gold. And so with that, we began a manufacturing plant here in the Fairbanks area, which lent to our economy and helped us and helped our mining industry. And at the same time, when you think about that, you think about, well, he, of course, had to order his steel from outside for the manufacture of the sluice boxes. But by the same token, we also had an increase in employment, in that he had several people working
for
him.
You fabricated it here. You assembled and fabricated.
All fabricated, yeah. Right here, under the guidance of the miners and the mining industry. And Hector then slowly but surely began manufacturing some of the most well-respected gold recovery units, not in just in the state, but in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, you know, the miners began collecting more and more of the fine gold, and of course, property that which was at one time uneconomic to mine became economic to mine. And with that thought, those people who are interested in placer mining and fine gold recovery might like to talk to Hector out there at 13 Mile Richardson Highway at North Pole. And of course, his phone number is 488 6432.
He's a member of the Interior Alaska Manufacturers. There are about 80 or more of them now, and it's an extraordinary range of talent that we have in this area. And I have a notion that manufacturing, which is either fabricating or assembly or any form that would go under the general term of manufacturing, is very important aspect of the future. You know, I just reflect again, when I look at all of the land that we have, and the words that come to me are stewardship and husbandry, and it seems that we have a purpose as human beings, and of course not to destroy and not to desecrate, and not to just take off the cream, to discover somehow what the total utilization could be that would have a lasting value. That we could use this land intelligently, so that there was always be a resource available for the generations that follow. And the timber is a fine prospect for us. And think in terms of what are all of the uses that could be made of 1,000 acres of the boreal forest.
Well, there's something interesting about that, is that you take the timbering, and once we start harvesting, what other types of businesses spring up from that type of work? For example, from the gold mining industry and Hector's work, we acquired more gold, and then other types of businesses spring out of that. For example, Oxford Assaying and Refining, which came into existence in Fairbanks, Alaska in the late 1970s, began buying the miners' gold. Up till that time, there were some buyers in the area, but Oxford developed a strong base here and finally has become one of the most well-known gold buyers within the state. They not only do they buy the gold from the miners, but they also have special gift items over there for that somebody special, such as gold coins, silver ingots. And these, of course, make fascinating gift ideas and gifts that would be well remembered through the years. But there's more to it than that. We think, well, what happens after Oxford buys the gold? And of course, Oxford Assaying is located at 208 Wendell Street. They take that gold and they melt it down into a bar called a Dory bar. Then they evaluate that Dory bar, and after that evaluation, they pay the miner on the amount of gold in the bar. But in addition, we have to remember that there's a certain amount of silver alloyed with that gold. So the miner also gets compensation for the silver in the bar. That bar then is sent down to the refinery, where it's turned into pure gold, which is 999, or 99.9% gold, and poured into a 400-ounce good delivery bar, which is exchanged at the marketplace. I had an interesting experience a few months ago. I went over to Oxford, and they had some nuggets there, and I purchased one of the nuggets that was what I thought would be appealing to a special person in my life. And I had that nugget hung on a chain and presented that as a gift. And I can't think of a nicer gift than precious metals. They're long remembered, and people enjoy receiving them. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, Oxford Assaying and Refining is located at 208 Wendell Street. Their phone number is 456-3967. And they also have a special quote line, which gives you the prices of the precious metals every day, and that's 452-7858. And today, the price of gold, according to Oxford's quote line, is $406.90 an ounce, and the price of silver is $6.30 an ounce, platinum, $517.40 an ounce. Now, we're going to leave you for just a minute, to listen to today's people, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dr. Wood.
This Saturday night's All-Star Celebration, the 88 Voach, features comedians like Robin Williams, Billy Crystal, and Lily Tomlin. And the producers of the show have to allot equal time for roasts of both candidates. Now, I hear Whoopi Goldberg's routine had lots of colorful words. Whoopi's new album, Fontaine, Why Am I Straight, bears a label warning caution, strong language. And Whoopi told me she thinks that's silly.
It's kind of a chuckle. It's, I guess, part of Tippy Gore's little program. And Tippy, you know, I just hope no one takes the time to investigate what your language habits are at home, because I suspect if they did, they would be very surprised that you are human and normal and use these words.
And the first night Mary Hart wore pants on Entertainment Tonight, in New York anyway, the show got its highest ratings ever. Go figure. I'm Joanna Langfield.
Whenever Sears has a sale that includes electronics, it's one sale you'll really want to plug into. Announcing Sears Super Sale. Starting Wednesday, you can save $32 on our VHS VCR with remote and $22 on our 19-inch color TV. Your choice of VCR or TV, just $197. Let's play that back. Your choice of VCR or TV, just $197. But hurry, because after Saturday, we're pulling the plug. Sears, your money's worth and a whole lot more.
When a stranger calls and tries to pressure you into a sale, don't put your money on the line until you get the facts. Hi, I'm Bill Tankersley for your Better Business Bureau. While telemarketing is used by legitimate businesses, it's also abused by fraudulent operators. If you're interested in an offer, ask the caller to send you more information. Never give your credit card number over the phone unless you made the call. And check out the company with your Better Business Bureau.
I'd like to give you a couple of messages from some friends down in Anchorage. We'd like to talk about Days In, downtown Anchorage, Alaska. Whether you're traveling for business or pleasure, at the Days In Anchorage, you can expect personal service, quality accommodations, and affordable rates. The downtown Anchorage Days In Hotel offers 116 rooms, each decorated with furnishings and amenities you expect from the expensive lodging chains. With its convenient location, quality accommodations, and friendly staff, there is no better lodging choice in the city. Traveling to the last frontier is truly a unique experience that should not be missed by anyone. You will have the opportunity to witness some of the most beautiful scenery imaginable, just a short distance from the Anchorage Days Inn Hotel. A favorite with Fairbanks travelers, the Days Inn Anchorage offers economy and convenience. Located downtown, you are within easy walking distance of all downtown businesses and popular tourist attractions. We invite you to visit the Anchorage Days Inn Hotel. You will experience a relaxed atmosphere designed with your comfort in mind and efficient, friendly staff to assist you with your special needs. Just 14 minutes from Anchorage International Airport and 5 minutes from Merrill Field and 6 blocks from the train station, Days Inn Anchorage is ideally located in the heart of Anchorage. For reservations, call 800-325-2525. That's 800-325-2525. Dr. Wood, we're here on Alaska Gold Trails, and I'd like to remind the listening audience that if they have a question for you or would like to make a comment on Alaska Gold Trails, that our number here is 479-8255. Now, you had some teaching and some educational experiences in Nevada, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, after the Michigan experience, there was both the copper mining area and then in the Yubik Iron Range mining area, I went to University of Iowa for a couple of degrees and subsequently to Evanston, Illinois to teach and be an administrator at the Evanston Township High School, and later we set up a community college there. And I taught at Northwestern part-time as a lecturer for about 10 years. And then I went to the U.S. Office of Education as a specialist in higher education, and worked extensively with the new community college concept as a form of continuing education beyond the high school level. Afterwards, I had an opportunity to go to Nevada I was an academic vice president of the University of Nevada. And Jeff, I just recall I had the opportunity to set up what we call Nevada Southern. It's now the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And I drove from Reno to Las Vegas and back every week. It's 455 miles. And if you started early enough in the morning, you get down to Las Vegas by noon and work all afternoon, and then you could drive home that evening. It made quite a day of it. But we did get the university. Oh, you can, through that desert, you know, there's the mile after mile, just straight, and you open it up, average about 90 to 100 miles an hour.
If I recall, there was no speed limit.
No speed limits at all, and nobody else to bother you, so you just drove along. But that was an interesting experience because I had to deal a great deal with mining people, not only the gold mining, but also the copper there at Yerington, the gold up at the Golconda Heights and Winnemucca area and beyond, and then, of course, the old silver mines in Virginia City area. But tungsten was much in demand at that time. And I remember one interesting experience. We were building a new facility, whether it was a student union or a new college of business or a new library or what it was on the campus in Reno. And we needed iron. And we bought it and found out that the ore had been mined at Lovelock, about 100 miles north of Reno. And then it had been shipped to Japan. And then it had been brought back. And we bought it then from American dealers in California. But the price was considerably less to buy the Japanese processed iron ore from Nevada than it was to buy the Kaiser from the Kaiser plant, the Fontana plant, which was a couple hundred miles at most from Reno. And I'm still puzzled about that. If you could mine it in Nevada and ship it to Japan for smelting and processing, whatever you did to it, and then get it back cheaper than what you could process the same ore in a plant 200 miles from you in California. It was an interesting experience, believe me. I come back to that notion that we ought to examine sometime in some depth, the notion of stewardship. I believe it is biblically based, that man has a responsibility that is different from that of other living things, whether they're plant or animal or whatever, or insects. And I'm not certain that we are exercising our responsibilities, are carrying out our responsibilities in connection with the stewardship of Alaska on its resources. Now, there's the word husbandry comes in there, too, that needs to be examined. As you well know, all of the new wealth that we know in the world comes from two sources. It comes from mining and it comes from agriculture. Now, both very broadly conceived. And mining would include the use of the gravels or whatever. But the agriculture is the fisheries and the furs and the timber and the berries and the fruits and the vegetables and the potatoes, everything that grows. I'm not at all certain that we're using our best intelligence in carrying out our responsibilities of stewardship of Alaska. We've been more or less in the high grade activity. Come in and take out the top of something, the cream. And then when that's gone, then we scratch around to find something else we can high grade. And I doubt that that's a very intelligent approach. But we ought to, as Alaskans, we ought to examine this whole concept of stewardship. What is the total usage that you can make on a continuing basis, that is, without destroying, without desecrating or degrading, but continuing it? And we need to spend a lot of thinking on this before we get too deep into the doing.
So we need to, a lot of thought on multiple use and...
It's more than multiple use in my book. It is total use. What's the ultimate utilization that you can make? I also think in terms of that idle resources are an expense that man cannot afford for indefinitely. Mm-hmm. You may be wealthy enough at one point by high-grading some one type of thing to let everything else lie idle. But it is both a social and an economic expense to have unutilized resources, and especially the land resource. That doesn't mean that some of it isn't at its best use when it's simply there in a pristine state. It does something for the soul. But where do you draw the line? Okay. That whole notion of stewardship and of husbandry needs to be critically examined in depth by all of us.
What I'd like to do, Dr. Wood, is come back in just a couple of minutes here and talk a little bit about what magnetism drew you to Alaska. So we'll be right back here with Dr. Wood on Alaska Gold Trails in just a second. But first, I want to tell you a little story about an experience that I had just recently this past summer. As a lot of you may know, I go out into the field and visit a lot of the mining operations. It's very important to me during these visitations to document what I do, and as a result, I take a lot of photographs. Well, I have this AE-1, Canon AE-1 camera that I was using out at the mines, and I have been using it over the years, and the advanced lever on the camera, an important feature, as you know, somehow came loose and it's spring-loaded, so it flew off into a creek somewhere. And as a result, I couldn't advance the film so I could take the pictures any longer. Well, I took it down to see if I could send it off for repair, and the result was that they wanted $150 to repair the thing. And of course, I said, well, that's quite a lot of money. I might as well just buy a new camera. So I went and checked around to see how much I could buy a new camera. Well, since I bought this old Canon AE-1, things have changed. Now they are autofocus and auto everything. And the result was that it would be fine. I could buy a new camera for around $400 or $500. But the other part of it was that I had $2,000 worth of lenses that wouldn't fit on these newer type style cameras. And I was not ready to purchase a whole wide variety of lenses once again. So I thought about it for a couple of days, and what I came down to is that I decided to go over to B&L Pond at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman and see what they had in old cameras. And I walked in there, and they have just cases and cases of cameras there. And I looked down there, and there were four AE-1s sitting in the shelf. And so I looked them over, and there were two that were almost brand new. And as a result of that, we talked it over for a while, and the folks at B&L Pond thought that if I would take two of them, they would give me both of them for $200. Well, I thought that was a real good deal, but then I told them that I heard about their business on Alaska Gold Trails, and it just so happened I was talking to Killer over there, and she says, well, if you heard about it on Alaska Gold Trails, we'll sweeten the deal. We'll give them to you for $180. That's the deal that we advertised on Alaska Gold Trails. And sure enough, I walked out of B&L Pond with two almost brand new AE-1 cameras. My lens would fit them, and I got them for almost the same price they wanted, the repair people wanted to repair my old camera. In addition to that, I'd also like to point out that the BNL Pawn guaranteed the cameras. They permitted me to take them home. I ran a roll of film through each one of them, had the film checked for color and character, and the cameras worked fine. So, if you want a good deal, you need something special, go over to BNL Pawn. Not only do they carry cameras, they carry TVs, they carry rings, parkas, VCRs, and every kind of equipment you can possibly think of. So that's B&L Pawn at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman. Their phone number is 452-6491. Now, in addition to that, I have one other story that I'd like to tell you about before the show is over, and that is, years ago, I started taking my vehicle to a particular auto repair shop. This was long before Alaska Gold Trails ever came on the air, and I have been happy with the effort of these people for perhaps 5 years now, and that's Gabe's Truck and Auto. And they're, of course, located off of Van Horn Road near the Metro Field area. Not only does Gabe repair small automobiles, they also repair pickup trucks, large trucks, and in addition to that, they have wreckers available on a 24-hour basis. And if you are stuck someplace, you can give them a call. Their number is 456-6156, anytime, day or night, and that wrecker is available to come out and give you a hand. In addition to that, they also have rebuilt engines, and they supply all kinds of services. It's a one-stop service center for your automobile. I was over there just recently getting the IM test, and Gabe's Truck and Auto, of course, has the no-pass, no-pay policy. So if you don't pass, you don't pay at Gabe's. You want to keep that in mind. I went in, had the car pulled into the shop. The young man that took care of me explained the different characteristics of the testing procedure to me and showed me what this test was all about. And I was happy to find out that my car passed without any problem. And that's Gabe's Truck and Auto, Van Horn Road near Metro Field. Their phone number once again is 456-6156. Give them a try. I guarantee you'll like their service and you'll like the quality. That's Gabe's Truck and Auto. Okay, Dr. Wood, tell me, tell the listening audience just a little bit about what drew you to Alaska. And I understand you came in about 1960, is that correct?
That's right.
1960.
Jim, the short answer is I was offered a job.
Is that right?
But it was so attractive in terms of the things that interested me a great deal that I would have jumped at taking up the offer, even if I'd had to pay money for it, which, of course, I didn't have. Here you had an entire state, and you had constitutionally based a state university, which was the entire system of public higher education in the state of Alaska, in the whole state. There was everything to do. Now, I was familiar with the situation because I'm at the Office of Education for 5 years. It was my assignment, nearly 5 years, to visit all the states in the Union. And I think I was on the campus of all the two-thirds, three-fourths maybe, of all the institutions of higher learning in the United States, in every state. And the one place which had everything to do was Alaska. And since my interests are always of to explore and to try to find new ways to do something, to create, to build, this was simply an ideal chance. And I never once much interested in tinkering with the operation of something that is already structured, already built. Much more interested in the building than in the operation. And that's everything, not only facilities, but the faculty, the student body, the staff, the whole bit. And this was ideal. I came, one, because I was asked, but it was a job that was, to me, the finest job in all higher education in North America.
How long were you president of the University of Alaska?
13 years.
13 years. You retired in 1973 then.
That's right. Overage and grade, as we say in the Navy.
Overage and grade.
And then we just stayed here, and that was 15 years ago. So I've lived here. Now, this is beginning of my 29th year.
Beginning of your 29th year, and a lot of service to Alaska. We don't have a lot of time, but I would like for you to briefly describe the activities surrounding being city mayor and what you accomplished as city mayor in terms of upgrading the appearance of Fairbanks, Alaska.
Well, I was asked to declare for mayor and was fortunate enough to win the election. And I served for the 2 years in 58 to 60, during which time I had a heart attack and spent some time in the hospital. It probably would have happened anyway, but being mayor isn't the calmest assignment that you can pick up. Well, during that 2 years, though, in late 80, in October, a resolution was put forth to asking this. The city was asking that we... that we prepare to celebrate the silver anniversary of Alaska's statehood, which is coming along in 1984. And from that came the project of the great statue, the sculpture in Golden Heart Park, and all the plaques with the names on it. And then also came the book about interior Alaska called The Interior Alaska Journey Through Time, which was, by the way, in manuscripts shown to or lent to Jim Michener, and he used it as the basis for his first three chapters of the of Alaska, recently published. And we did many other things. We had various, it was a year-long celebration, even had a stamp issued for the 25th.
I want to interrupt just a minute. You have a caller here, Dr. Wood.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Dr. Wood?
Yes, please. Speaking of the park and the Alaskan family, I would like to ask Dr. Wood, our family has been in the area for 37 years, most of them, and all of us are on the plaques, but my new daughter-in-law and granddaughter, is there a possibility to add still on the plaques?
Not on the existing ones. The series of 49 is complete. However, there is a likelihood, the board is has been discussing this, that we will have one or two additional plaques just for the things. I had a young granddaughter that came along after the fact.
Right.
And then there's another one apparently in the wings about to come along. And there is a considerable interest, and there are people that never heard about it, although for 4 or 5 years we did a lot of advertising.
Oh,
but
yeah.
People that didn't hear about it, didn't pay any attention to it, now they feel neglected.
You're
so
right.
We probably will open up one or two more plaques in the parks, possibly a total of three. But the decision hasn't been firm as yet, but it looks as if we might.
Now, Dr. Wood, follow up on that previous question that I gave you. How would one...
Well, we're taking now the names and the addresses, the telephone numbers, but not accepting any money. And
right.
So we just send your name, say you're interested, and your address. And as soon as the decision is made, we'll notify you and send you the form.
What's your phone number?
To where?
456-1984 is the phone number. And the address, simplest one to remember, is simply 514 2nd Avenue, Suite 102, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701. That's the Lathrop Building. It's owned by the University of Alaska Foundation.
Your phone number, once again, we're running out of time.
456-1984.
Thank you very much.
456-1984. Yes. If you'd like to have more information.
And no money, just your name and address.
Right. One more question.
We're going to have to go. We're running out of time.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry. It looks like we're just about to the end of the trail on this particular version of Alaska Gold Trails. I want to thank Dr. Wood for being with us here on Alaska Gold Trails today. And we'll be looking forward next week to having Dr. Russell Osterman, the head of the Petroleum Department at the School of Mineral Engineering at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, on the show. So, folks, once again, we've come to the end of the trail. I want to thank you for listening. And until next week, Thursday, right here on KFAR at 1 o'clock, this is Jim Madonna on Alaska Gold Trails saying happy prospecting. KFAR 660 on your radio dial.